Howard Thurman is one of my favorites. He has a quote that says, "Don't ask yourself what the world needs. Ask yourself what makes you come alive, and go do that. Because what the world needs is people who have come alive."
This is episode 554 on the Hidden Wife podcast with John DeWall. G'day crew, how the heck are you? Welcome to the Hidden Wife podcast. I hope you're very well indeed. Thank you for taking the time out to join me in this conversation with John DeWall. So John is the founder of Liminal Space, a non-profit dedicated to helping others navigate life's major transitions. As John suggests, change is a natural part of the human story. In all life transition, no matter how small or large, transformation takes place, and it is that process that shapes our future story. How we manage and respond to transition is a choice. How we learn and grow from the experience is powerful. I absolutely loved this chat with John. He lays down the fundamentals of change and transition and why it's such an important topic. Not only an important topic to himself, but all of us, because we all do go through transition at some point in our life. And it's how we handle that that's really going to shape the future of ourselves. So look, he shares many practical tips in this episode that I believe we can all learn from and benefit from. Plenty of practical tips. He talks about the power of story. He talks about change and apprehension and impermanence. Just a beautiful discussion, guys. He also shares his story, you know, why this change is such a major topic for himself and how he's used it to now assist hundreds of others through life's major transitions. Enjoy this chat, guys. We'll speak at the other end. Thank you.
I'm well. Thanks for having me, Lee.
It's a pleasure to have you, and looking forward to our conversation this morning. So, look, let's start with a little bit about yourself. In a summary, in a nutshell, how would you describe yourself and what you do?
Yeah, so I often use the image of Sherpa. The work that I do with people is in that space of transition, major life transition, yep, where things are kind of topsy-turvy, and my work with folks is to walk alongside them through that in-between time in life. And it could be everything from a job change or career discontent to empty nesting, retirement, life after divorce and trying to rebuild. All of those seasons where there's just a lot of questions and not a lot of easy answers, and helping them find those answers. So that's what I do primarily in the work that I do in this world.
Okay, excellent. And that's all to do with your company. You're the founder of Liminal Space, is that right?
I am, yeah. I founded Liminal Space. This would be now our 10th year in existence, a big 10-year anniversary.
Wow.
Thank you, yeah. Something that I had originally thought I would start when I was 50 or so years old, kind of a second act kind of thing. But a friend challenged me about a decade ago now, saying, "Why would you wait?" After hearing the dream that I had to work with people in the ways that I was sharing with him, and really challenged me and provoked me to step into the dream now and not wait and start creating and building. And so that's what we set out to do 10 years ago. And I'm so grateful that I did. And I think it turned into a better story.
That's good when you take that initiative and it works out. And I think a lot of people certainly avoid doing those things and perhaps, you know, regret it later on.
Yes. Yes.
We can probably talk about that as well. So just quickly, what is the meaning of liminal space?
Liminal comes from the Latin limens, which means threshold. So it's that, you know, that space in between one room and the next. It's that in between place. So that is quite often a place that people choose to avoid at all cost because of its discomfort and uncertainty. But it's also a place that, if we learn to wait, holds profound opportunity in the turbulence. And that's where I work with people, is on the threshold of whatever it is that they're dealing with, whatever the changes that they have experienced, and what they're hoping to find on the other side of that door. And so it's that space where there's a lot of in between, a lot of waiting and not knowing.
Okay, excellent. I'd like to find out the why behind, you know, why people do what they do. What's the story for you? Why is this this career path and this thing that you do so important and have meaning to you?
Yeah, I think, man, that's such a big question. Mm. There are stories that I could certainly share with you that could, from the earliest of years, share as to why I seem to have this both apprehension and fascination with places of waiting and not knowing. I remember when I was going into the second grade and feeling apprehension one summer night and couldn't sleep and came down the stairs and asked my dad to talk. And I said, I'm nervous about going into the second grade. And having that conversation on the front porch of our home growing up with my dad about that. So already, I think at an early age, I started to wonder and feel what it was to be in that in-between. And as years rolled on, a number of other stories that I can mark, whether it be me in my own transitions or working and engaging and being a friend to others and theirs, that created some sense of an at-homeness in that in-between. And where I think I do some of my best work, and I think that one of those things that I do really well is just with my curiosity, bringing questions, and in those questions, an empathy for the person and a compassion for the person that's in that in between. And I marry that also too with this part of my heart that there's a practical piece to the work that I do, the coaching piece to the work that I do, given some of my Dutch heritage and that work ethic and pragmatism. I do bring that to the work that I do with clients because they're looking for some answers and some good next steps, and they want to understand how they got to where they're at, and fundamentally who they are as a person and what this whole story and journey is about. So why I do what I do is tied to story. It's also tied to a big part of the reason I do what I do is the faith that I bring to my work. I believe that profound transformation happens during times that we at best view as a nuisance, but I personally believe that's where God does his best work. So it's the times when we feel most weak and most ill-equipped and most unable to know what it means to move forward with the life that we have that I think so much good can be revealed regarding who we are and what's being invited, both in our courage and our creativity and our personhood. And doing that in the midst of things that tend to result in fear and, you know, worry and uncertainty. And that's when I think we just discover the best things.
Yeah.
So those are like a couple of big reasons why I do what I do. And it's just such a, I mean, my drug of choice is watching someone slog through those challenging in-between times, whether it be, you know, figuring out their passion or their career path or figuring out what it means to live and build a life after a divorce or let go of a career they've known for 40 years and take that leap of faith towards the unknown of life after that, and step towards desire and step towards freedom and possibility and real steps. There's not much else that produces that kind of joy. So that's a big part of why I do what I do.
Cool. A lot to unpack in that as well. And I couldn't agree more with pretty much everything you said. I feel personally, that change and that transition, is something that I thrive on, and I actually seem to, move towards it. I'm constantly looking for it actually. And I don't know, I really haven't connected the dots that well, but where that's come from in my life, but certainly it's something that I always seem to do, and that might be because I just get a bit antsy and can't sit still, or it might be because I'm just curious, you know, and I want to keep learning and doing different things. I'm not sure, but I seem to push myself into those moments, and then when I'm there, I'm just like, holy geez, what did I do this for? Because it is easier in that place of comfort. Yes, there's a lot of transition that happens outside our control. But there's a lot of transition also that happens because of our moves that we make. In the people you work with, are you dealing with people that actually are sort of having transitions that sort of were unexpected, or do you work with both people, you know, pushing them into new transitions and new paths that, you know, perhaps they want to explore?
I would say the majority of the people I work with are those that find themselves having to deal with unexpected change. Mm-hmm. And though there may have been signs along the way that told them, like, yeah, you know, the economy is doing what it's doing and, you know, I should get prepared, or, boy, there's a lot of trouble in our marriage, we need to address this now, and they didn't. And now they stand there with divorce papers and having to build a life next. That's typically the kind of story, yeah, that it's more of a reaction to the changes that have occurred versus the individual that says, you know what, love where I'm at with my career so far, really want to be proactive and intentional about the next 3 or 4 steps. Unfortunately, that's just not how people often operate with that level of intentionality. And they certainly don't seek help to do that, in my experience.
Okay. Yeah. So you think that the people that actually are sort of pushed into that change need, yeah, help more than those that actually proactively go into it.
Correct. Yeah. And sometimes that change is, you know, they're complicit in it. But quite often, you know, the stuff just happens to them. Yeah. And they have to figure out a way to respond to that change. Either way, I think it's really about slowing down and being intentional with how you engage what the change is and what it's asking of you to become.
Okay. So look, let's talk about change and transition. I believe it happens to all of us at some point. And you deal with obviously sort of major life transitions that people go through. But yep, there's small changes every day, I suppose. But the one thing that comes to my mind is that everything is constantly changing. You know,
yep,
look at the Buddhist sort of practice, I suppose, that sort of teaches us that nothing is permanent, everything is impermanent. And once,
yeah,
we can understand that, perhaps we can better handle it. But let me put it over to you. How do you describe change and why it's necessary, etc.?
Well, I would just echo what you just shared. I think change is just part of what it means to be human. I think to live on this planet as a human means that you're going to go through one change after another. And I think you can work really hard to try to mitigate against change and try to build routines that are predictable. But at the end of the day, things happen in life that are outside of our control. So really it's about growing a certain level of comfort with, to live as a human means you're going to go through all kinds of disruption. So how do you want to respond to those disruptions? Does your response cause you to be to create a smaller story that shrinks back from an edge of possibility and creating a life worth living? Or does it look like retreating in fear and worry and anxiety, a smallness? And I think again and again, like, that's just not how we were created to live our lives. There's too much precious about each person. But I think the real work that is with the clients I serve is whether they're living a small story or a big story and they want a bigger story, it's really slowing down to just pay attention to what the change what the change has produced in their life and what it's inviting them to become. Just to tell a story about a recent client who had a fairly traumatic experience happen to them, where on vacation, a tree fell on their family vehicle and instantly killed both of her parents and paralyzed her. She lost all the ability to walk and move in the world. And she lost her career that she loved as a result, as a teacher, and spent the next 2 years essentially trying to just figure out a way to live, stay alive, clothe herself, feed herself, get the help that she needed. And then after those 2 years, when I intersected with her story, it was, okay, I've learned how to do those things. Now I want to live. I want a life beyond just staying alive. And in the midst of such a traumatic story, really figuring out what it means to respond to a change that no one would choose, right? No one would choose that kind of disruption. But even still, asking questions related to, how do I build a story that's meaningful? My life matters. I want a story where my life matters. And working with her, one of the things that she discovered is that she loves to travel and she wants to make that more accessible to all individuals that have some different issue going on with their body that makes that hard. It could be just naturally aging or some type of physical disability that makes that challenging. And she wants to invite people to move beyond the boundaries of whatever their body is telling them they can or cannot do, and naming that a lot of that, especially for her situation, was how she was thinking about it. And so it's such an amazing story to watch and witness and help her discover that even in the midst of those circumstances and a really traumatic change to her life, she can build a story that's really rich and meaningful. And yeah, it's not without pain. She still grieves her mom and dad every single day. But she's also in love with the life that she is building and moving towards. And I think that's maybe what it means to become more human. You hold the sorrow and the pain that is the result of a lot of change in life. And by holding that well and creating space for it, you also create also space for joy and possibility.
Yeah. Okay. First of all, I think dealing with people that have gone through that much trauma does take a lot of compassion. So, you know, kudos to you for being able to do that, because certainly it's something that I'd find hard because I wear my emotions on the surface. But, you know, it's really important to have people there that can help those people.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I like about stories like that is it makes you reflect on your own trauma and transitions and changes that you go through. And for me personally, they're very insignificant compared to, you know, something like that, at least at this stage. Who knows what's around the corner.
Yeah.
Really important too. Now, you said sort of holding on to that pain, you know, which is never easy probably to let go of. But is it about holding on, or is it about sort of accepting it and then sort of allowing it to pass if you can? Or is that non-achievable?
I think it is about accepting it. I think that's a really good word. I think part of every transition that's brought about by some form of change is looking at the things that have occurred. And quite often that means there's been an ending and it was meaningful, you know, whether it's in this person's case, the loss of her ability to move freely throughout the world, the loss of a great career. And what does it mean to really accept that story and grieve that story? Another example, talking with a lady not too long ago who 35 years before I met her was an A student in college, had a really bad student teaching experience, and was told by her advisor that she was not cut out to teach. And as she was sitting in my office sharing that story and the tears and the sadness tied to that event and that experience, told her that she's not a teacher, yet so much about her life since then had teaching elements to it, but they were kind of done in fits and starts and just long enough so that she didn't have to deal with any possible pain of disappointment or any long-term commitments to becoming more of a teacher. So she would start something and stop and start something again and stop, or just not put herself in a position where she was challenged. So I think a lot of our work early on had been just to go back to what had happened and accept what that meant, as well as address some of the things that she believed about herself 35 years earlier, accepting that she agreed with this woman that told her that she was not a teacher and lived into that for many, many years. And so what often it means to engage change and loss and grief means we have to address things that have convinced us of things that we are. Yeah. And the falseness that those claims have over our lives and the way in which they prevent us from pursuing a passion. And so if we can't dismantle some of those false beliefs, then it's going to be really hard to claim new ones for a future we want.
Okay. Yeah, excellent. And I think a lot of these things that we've talked on so far, like about impermanence, mm-hmm. you know, about letting go and accepting and things like that, it's great to say it, but in that situation, yep. actually dealing with it, it's a lot harder to manage it, I guess. And that's where I'd like to take this conversation, is into some of the practices that you do to help people through a transition. But I just want to go to that, because you've mentioned it a few times throughout the podcast now, is about that story. And I've written a couple of articles on this as well, but we do seem to hold on to these stories that we tell ourselves. Is that ultimately why change is hard? Because we're so comfortable with this story And then when something needs to change, or when something does forcibly change, it's really hard to accept any new story. And that might be like changing a habit, or yeah, the loss of someone that you love or something like that. So what, you know, why is this story so fundamental, and how can we look at it, how can we dismantle, I guess, the story that we have to allow us to move into that new transition?
Well, I think all stories that have shaped who we are form different beliefs about what our lives are about, who we are as individuals, what we think all of this world is about, who we think, you know, whatever belief you have regarding your faith and a creator, there's relationships. What's the point of relationships? There's so much about our stories that define everything that we believe and how we make choices out of those beliefs. So there is a reason
that our story is like our conditioned state of being based on our past experiences up until this point.
Say more about what you're say more.
Well, what I mean is that the story that we hold on to now about who we are is basically a construction of the past. So what's happened in our past, all the experiences that we've had. And again, that builds into, you know, our beliefs and our values, and therefore how we behave and interact with all the relationships that exist in this world, whether that's people or other.
Yeah, I think I can get behind that. I think stories have a way of continuing to shape meaning throughout our whole life. But then when change occurs, it puts some of those under strain, and if not breaking completely. You know, I see this most frequently with the intense experiences of change, like the individual that says, I no longer want to be married to you. I thought my career, I thought my life was tied to this thing that I did, and I can no longer do that anymore because of, you know, the economy, or a business that got, you know, shut down, or being fired, and now I don't know who I am, and my sense of identity is pretty fragile or fragmented. So stories have a way of shaping our identity in a profound way. There's a reason why I love chicken tikka masala, and I can tell you the restaurant I ate that in for the very first time with a dear friend of mine. And I am forever going to love that food and forever remember that friend and that experience. The same is true as to why I absolutely love seeing people discover who they're meant to be in the world. It's tied to deep experiences within my own story and where I've encountered my own formation and my own faith in my stories. So, yeah, I think stories have such a profound way of shaping meaning and beliefs, some that are very true and will always be true, and some that are probably not so helpful and false and need to be broken. And that's part of the gift of, I think, change. It creates a certain level of suffering in our lives, a certain level of pain, a challenge, that challenges us to think about the potential for new beliefs. Who do I become as a result of new beliefs and the choices that I could make?
Yeah, you touched on something interesting about the, you know, the tikka masala with that dear friend. And I think some of those profound experiences are certainly much more embedded in our story and much harder to deal with in change and transition than perhaps other experiences that were more mild. And I think that's really important as well, because there's many things that we do every day that perhaps we haven't done before, but aren't as hardcore as sufferable to deal with. Whereas other things, you know, such embedded in our story, they're the things that are really hard to accept and change.
So I agree.
I think that's really, really important point. And you did touch on something else there. Oh, just with the suffering as well, whether it's suffering, dissatisfaction, pain, whatever comes from a change in our story. Is that because it opens us up to being so vulnerable? Like, is it a vulnerability issue?
I think that's part of it. I think when you go through a major change and something that did define everything from your identity to literally how you go about a day, like to have your routine disrupted, it creates a certain kind of vulnerability in life. And I think it's that space of vulnerability where there has been a disruption, whether it's identity or routine or a relationship, that's actually the most opportune time to discover new things for your life. Because if you've got all these different routines or set beliefs, or, you know, you've got all these things that shape and define, you know, quote unquote, who you are, some of the stuff that could open up new possibilities and new desires, or touch upon really a better, truer sense of who you are, they tend to stay underground and not emerge unless you really force a shovel into the ground and pull it out. And again, that level of intentionality we don't often live by. And I think that's why change and the associated pain that comes from change can be a gift. I mean, we're seeing that right now in our country, in the US, where there is so much change happening on almost every level, and the conversations that are happening because of the political climate, because of major events that have occurred, is really waking people up to the pain of things that are happening that have shaped and defined core beliefs about who we are as a country. And some of those are under strain and need to be broken and need to be reformed. And so, I mean, you're seeing this on such a systemic level across our country. And though it's uncomfortable, and though we wish it would in many ways go away, I'm so grateful that that we're having some of this. Yeah, because really there's new possibility
too, and I think, I mean, again, it comes down to just that mindset or perspective on what's happening, and certainly looking at it as an opportunity, to experience something different. And I suppose, like the American economy, we become so complacent,
exactly,
how we've done things, and suddenly when something changes, it's so disruptive. It takes you away from that complacency and forces you to look at the difference. And I guess you could either look at that and say, that sucks, that's really not what's going to be good for anything. Or you could look at it and, yep, say, well, hang on, this is an opportunity actually to really do something different and really shake things up, because there is, you know, in complacency, a lot of suffering and pain and depression and all that sort of stuff as well, I guess.
Yep, by far. And I you know, part of the two options, there's obviously more than two options, but within a transition, you can go more towards something that's more cynical, more critical, more of the victim of the change, or you can address the pain and the discomfort and engage with a heart that wants a life that's more open and creative and alive, and move towards things that are about really creating in the world. And I have this favorite quote that came from a professor of mine who said, to critique is an abyss, it will consume your life, but to create is the more rewarding and life-giving task. And I just, that resonates so deeply as I think about what it means to move through a time where there's disruption. There are things that are fundamentally shifting beneath our feet, whether it's on an individual level or a systemic level. And to engage that well means we have to let go of things that keep our hearts secure and safe and comfortable, that probably ultimately aren't fundamentally good for us.
Yeah.
And consider then what it means to lean into something that's more vulnerable, invites more of our courage forward, more of our creativity, which I think is actually what it means to be more fully alive, is stepping into that stuff.
Absolutely. So let's talk about some of these practical tips. But before we can get there, I suppose, what are some of the obstacles or elements that you come across that really, I suppose, block people from moving into that change and really embracing that transition as a powerful tool rather than a roadblock in life?
Well, you know, some of the things that I've been seeing more recently, both for my own life and for the life of a lot of clients that I work with, is that they're never really choosing from an option of good and bad. They're choosing between good and good. And that's really hard to do when you walk into a grocery store and the choices on the number of toothpaste are like 65 different options. You really have just a ridiculous number of choices available to you. So how do you make those decisions? How do you make those choices? And seeing quite often people get paralyzed in that place of choice. And I think the challenge and the place of growth and maturity is to recognize the trade-offs that are present in the choices, and knowing fully well that you're letting go of certain things that could be good and accepting the ones that you do want that are good. And for me, that's become more and more of a learned discipline and skill, and with that, the ability to say no. I feel like I'm rarely choosing between good and bad. It's always like, boy, that would be fun, or that would be good. And is that where I could most well use my gifts, resources, and abilities right now, with where I'm at in my business and with where I feel like I want this thing to keep going for the next 3, 5, 10 years? And by saying no, is that actually going to be helping me to stay focused in a somewhat myopic way towards what I feel I'm supposed to be doing? And that's a really difficult thing, I think, to do on your own. And I think you need people to help find those no's and find those yeses with you. So that's a big part.
The choices, I'm just sort of trying to clarify this, the good and the bad.
Yeah.
Is that more looking at the choices as what are the good options and sort of, you know, keeping a positive perspective on it all? Or is it, you know, is there good and the bad still there?
Well, I think, you know, you could certainly think of number of choices that would be foolish and dumb and unwise. But, you know, what I see for if I just take my life as an example, if I'm choosing between, boy, I could create this workshop or this workshop, or I could work with these clients and say yes to this speaking opportunity, or, you know, right over here, or all these if I'm spread so thin and I'm saying yes to too many things, that I'm not really able to go to the depth of what I feel like I really would like to. Okay. And I'm choosing then to say no to a few things that, yeah, they may actually yield something of a return, but they actually prevent, yeah, they're less what I can see over here that needs to have my attention and focus. That's also good, and that needs to be the priority. And I think that's such a hard thing to do.
Yeah, so when we go through change, trauma, transition in that period, we open the doorways, I guess, to a lot more choice from where we were, because where we were was perhaps, you know, routine, complacent, whatever it was. I'm just trying to unwrap this. So when you open that door to that transition, there's multiple of choices there that we have to choose on. So it's really about understanding how to discern between choices and really navigate your way through that space so that you're not pulled in all different directions, because that will obviously make it a more difficult transition. Is that correct? Is that sort of
the nuts and bolts? I think that says it well. And then I also think there's a second part to that, is to see how the choices you're making now, say for a career, the next step you're going to take in your career, whether it be a company or starting something on your own, it's seeing how that next step might be tied to the next two or three steps. So yeses that build momentum upon each other, and by saying yes well now and no to the things that you should be saying no to, that's actually going to help move you more towards the things that you ultimately have said you want for your life. And helping people see that, how yeses build upon themselves.
So yeah, I mean, eliminating choice, I suppose, and understanding what choices perhaps are the ones that are more right for you to move towards, et cetera, difficult tasks. Certainly I try to minimize things in my life, to really help me with that choice. Like, I pretty much wear the same thing every day, and, removing the clutter from my life as well, both in possessions and what I do. What I think about, and certainly I have practices that help me do that. But what are your thoughts on how people can really navigate that space through choice? What are some practical tips?
Well, one of the things that I think is undervalued or appreciated is just the ability or the discipline to and practice to write things down that you have committed to. So this is, you know, tip it's something that people usually do at the beginning of the year, is like writing down their goals and the things that they're focusing on for the year. But then that stuff goes in a drawer or stays in a folder on their laptop, and it never gets brought back out except for maybe those first week or two. So to actually print those things off and put them in a visible place that you have to walk past constantly and see, whether it's the mirror or the whiteboard or the wall that you see and stare at all the time, there's something happening in that kind of practice that I think just doesn't happen enough for a lot of people. Okay. You know, that maybe you call it a visioning board or whatever you need to call it, but it's something, there's something tangible happening in the writing down and seeing that and staring at that with some level of regularity that I think has a lot of benefit.
Yeah, well, we're such visual beings as well, and I think just to have those visual cues around you for whatever change you might be transitioning into is certainly a good trigger, because often if you don't, it can just fall to the back of the mind, back into the unconscious, and back into something that's not relevant yet is absolutely necessary. That makes sense. Okay, what other sort of practices do you have in helping, you know, people with transition? Like if I came to you and said I'm going through this, you know, how do you work with people to really help them through that?
Well, one of the things I do early on with folks is we have a tool that we use at the beginning of our journeys with clients, and it's called a liminal strengths assessment. You can find it on our website. And it's a tool that has 7 different dimensions that we look at, such as community, risk-taking, self-honesty, self-care, community, all these different dimensions that we've, through the years as we've been studying what allows for a person to successfully navigate change and transition. It keeps coming back to these seven attributes. And so what we do early on is explore, how have you navigated past transition? How has it aided you? And how has it perhaps prevented you from gleaning from a transition what you need to? And as you look to the future or a current transition, are there tweaks? Are there changes? Is there a plan that can be put in place for this particular transition that would help you stay as long as you need to discover what you need to discover from it? So, for example, I just finished with a session with an individual who has a fairly consistent experience with his community and friends, but doesn't really look to them for advice and direction and help. And so my challenge to them was, what would it look like to pick 3 or 4 individuals that could meet with you once a week, meet with one of them once a week for the next 6 months? So really you're talking about one person meeting with them 6 times for the next 6 months, and you bring to them data from your life and get their unique perspective on it. So they read stories that you've created having to do with you at your best. They read stories of your career moments that you're most proud of. They read stories that are about your dreams and desires for the future. They look at assessment tools with you where it's identifying your gifts and strengths. So instead of me just sitting with them, you know, on a regular basis, reflecting back to them what I see, what would it look like to bring in a lot of truth tellers and mirrors, essentially, to your life and reflect back to you what we as a community are seeing, and how does that resonate with you as the individual? And where there's alignment, that seems like a really strong clue for you to follow, for you to pay attention to. And give weight. So that's one example of how might you as an individual engage one of those 7 dimensions of transition and pull that lever to find strength to keep you engaged in the transition and learn what you need to learn and become who you need to become. And so that's one of the things we do very early on with our clients through that tool.
That's a obviously a very daunting task probably for a lot of people to do, to go out there and get that external reflection. But yeah, very powerful as well. And certainly I've tried it from time to time, probably don't try it enough really. Just going back, what are the 7 dimensions again? So you said community, self-care.
community, self-care, honesty, risk-taking and action. I don't have them all in front of me, and I can usually only remember three.
I'll stick a link in the show notes, so guys listening out there, check it out and have a look at that that worksheet as well. That's really cool. And make sure you check out all John's work, connect to him, thank him for coming on the show as well. John, what I want to do is run into some quick round questions now for you. Some of them we've probably already sort of touched on in some sort of aspect, but let's just run through them and see where it takes us. Do you have any routines or rituals you believe contribute to your success?
Yeah, now on Mondays and Fridays, those are my days for creating. I see clients only Tuesday through Thursday, and so I block off 2 days out of my week just for the sole purpose of creating things that are advancing my writing, my words, my creativity, the things that I need to build in the world. Great. So creating that time and guarding it.
And I'm glad you brought that up, actually, because it just triggers me back to something you said earlier, was about having curiosity and asking questions. Which I guess is probably a powerful tool in that transition, is really just to be curious about what's going on and asking relevant questions. Because when you ask those questions, as fearful as you might be to ask some of those questions, the answers can be powerful in helping you move through it as well. I don't know if you have anything to add on that, but also on the creativity piece, you touched on that before too. And, that creative process is so powerful. In our life, in every day, whether we're going through change or not, I think it's so important. It brings a great level of meaning and joy and all that.
Yep, and more energy into my own unique creative thoughts when I'm reading from other people and what they're creating in the world and what they're learning in the world, whether it's your favorite authors or bloggers or whomever is, podcasters, whoever is putting out great content, learning from them and listening to how that intersects your own creativity and then creating from that space. I often get so much energy from doing that. So it has to be a discipline of mine because there's so much life that comes from it.
Yeah, I'm the same. I mean, I put that into my routine where I try to do all my creative work in the morning when I first get up or after my exercise
routine. Yep, me too.
But it seems to bring a lot of power to my day.
Yep.
So good one. I like that one. What advice would you give your 20-year-old self?
Learn to disappoint others more. Not in a cruel kind of way, but get comfortable saying no, and what that means to disappoint others, especially as it relates to the things that you feel uniquely called to move into. I think we spend so much time and energy in our lives consumed with the needs and desires of others and placing that ahead of our own. And even as I say that, I imagine most people think easily like, well, he's saying be selfish. And that's not at all what I'm saying. I would want to tell my young self, you're going to continue to help the world and want to create and be good in the world. But at the same time, don't forget your own needs and desires and give those some attention. Learn to say no. Learn to say no as you say yes.
Okay, excellent. How would you define success and what does success look like to you?
Oh, man. That is such a big question. success. I think it's such a unique word that needs to be defined by each person and how they live their life in the service and connection to those around them. So I think success for me has implications in how I serve my clients, but also how I show up at home with my family, my wife and kids. I don't want to be one of those individuals who everyone sees is successful out in the world, but comes home and is a bit of a dick to his wife and kids. I want to be the kind of man who has success at home and work. And maybe that doesn't go as fast as I wish it would from a career standpoint. I think if I leaned more in that direction and moved away from some of the tensions that, family and commitments and obligations outside of work create, I could be a little further along, but I probably wouldn't be as joyful or content in some ways.
Yeah, absolutely. So. I think it's definitely an individual thing, how you define success, but I like that, how you live your life integrally as you wish to live it, I suppose. What tool, skill, resource, or technique has helped you improve your effectiveness or productivity? What one skill, tool, or resource?
I think from a productivity standpoint, it's simply the discipline for me of guarding and protecting time that I've set aside that's purely for creating. And for me, that means literally shutting down email, turning my phone off, so that I'm not distracted and doing what I would call deep work. There's a book that I read recently by Cal Newport called Deep Work, and it's such a good resource for those that want to learn what that looks like and means, and build some disciplines. So one of the new disciplines for me is I am going to be sending out an auto reply in my email that says I'm out of the office on Fridays and Mondays. Even though that's actually not true, but I want people to know there is going to be no response, that I'm not committed to responding to their emails just because they send it on a Friday or a Monday. And that day is, those days are sacred and for creating. So it's a small change in auto reply, but it's a significant impact.
Yeah. No, I like it. What advice would you give to anyone looking to make some change in their life?
Seek help. Whether it be friends or colleagues who have some skill and gifting in that area. Maybe they're a sagey, wise kind of person who's been there, done that, but get help. The arrogance of thinking you could navigate that transition and the complexity of it alone is just not good, and it's not healthy. We need each other. So either hire a pro, whether it's a counselor or a coach, or you go see a spiritual leader of some kind, hire a pro or find a pro or gain some community around you, to that friends and colleagues to help you move through.
Excellent. Good advice. And if you were to be served your last meal, what would you request?
Hands down, tikka masala, probably at a spicy level of 4 or 5 out of 5 stars, along with a nice big piece of naan bread.
Nice. That's what I want for dinner, actually. I'm gonna ask you that question. What activity gives you the greatest joy?
I love woodworking. It's one of those activities where I feel like the distractions and the things that keep my mind occupied often are shut down a bit, and I'm focusing on the wood and the craftsmanship and the smells, and it's all very just so engaging for me. So woodworking is that activity.
What, if you could pick one book to pass down to your children or future generations, what would it be?
Oh, man.
You mentioned a couple already, Carl Newport.
Yeah. I'll
stick that in the show notes as well, one I've read and reviewed on my podcast.
Yeah, boy, that's a good one. Probably one of my favorites. Can I pick two?
Yep.
Love Wins by Rob Bell is one of my favorites. Kind of a great look at what it means to be in relationship with one another and ourselves, and perhaps what God's up to in the world. And I think it challenges a lot of misguided beliefs in religion. And so that's one. And then I would say, one of my favorites is kind of an autobiography by Bryce Andrews called Bad Luck Way. Such a great story. He goes to Montana and basically serves as a ranch hand for a number of years. And there's a cowboy inside me. I grew up on a horse. I worked on a horse farm growing up and all through college, and just was one of the most magical jobs I've ever had. So there's a cowboy in me, and I would just want to leave behind that kind of story to my kids.
Yeah, cool. I'll stick those in the show notes, guys. So check it all out at thehiddenwhy.com. If you can use the links, that will definitely support the show as well. What quote, phrase, or message would you text or tweet to everyone in the world if you had the opportunity?
Howard Thurman is one of my favorites. He has a quote that says, "Don't ask yourself what the world needs. Ask yourself what makes you come alive, and go do that. Because what the world needs is people who have come alive."
Yeah.
And And I think in a world full of zombies, that's one that I would want to see more come true.
What do you believe? We all have a hidden why?
Yeah, I do. I think that hidden why prompts searching, prompts better questions. So yeah, I do. I think it's the now what questions where people get hung up. It's the what, especially as a result of change. But yeah, definitely. Why am I here? What am I doing with this one precious life I've been given? I think it's wired, built into us to be asking the why questions.
Searching for meaning. What does living life with passion and purpose mean to you?
Passion to me is a gritty word. It is not something that comes easy. It's that word that hits you when you have and you have met challenge and setbacks and the commitment to get up, to be true to yourself, to dust yourself off, and to do that with others' help. I think that's what it means to live with passion and to keep going towards who you know you're supposed to become in the world and what others around you are saying, yes, that's good, keep going. And I would also note, like, people who live with passion certainly have quite a few people that get in the way, that are impediments. And often both are true. You need people who are cheering you on, seeing that you have things that you need to stay true to and can fan the flames of that even more with you and expect resistance.
Mm. Yeah, nicely said. And the final question that I want to ask you is this is a really hard one, but what do you believe is the underlying motivation that drives everything that you do?
Love. Yeah, love. I want to become more of that in the world with those I intersect and the ways that I'm challenged to do that, learn what it means to grow.
Yeah. Cool. Mate, look, thank you for coming on the show today. I'm going to stick the links to your website, etc., plus that worksheet. I'll find that on there as well. So I can stick all the links in the show notes. So for you guys listening out there, check it all out at thehiddenwhy.com and make sure you leave your comments there as well. Let us know what you think, what you thought about this show. If you have any comments, questions, etc., do write them in that field. And you can also reach myself and John directly. I'll provide the links there as well should you want to ask for any extra advice, or if you have any other questions or comments directly to either of us individually, that'd be great. John, any final thoughts?
No, just thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it, Leo. It was a great conversation. Thank you so much.
Yeah, man, I absolutely enjoyed it. So, guys, check it all out at thehiddenwhy.com. Until next time, thanks for watching. Thanks, guys, for listening to this episode. I hope you enjoyed what you heard. I hope you love what you're hearing. If you like this episode, guys, or any of the episodes that you're listening to here at The Hidden Why, please do me a favor by sharing it. You can share it with your families, you can share it with your loved ones. You can do that by using your favorite social media channels using the icons on the platform that you're listening to The Hidden Why podcast. Also, guys, if you're a fan of the show, please connect with me. Connect with me at thehiddenwhy.com. I love to hear from you. I love to converse with the people that listen to this show to find out what they enjoy, what they don't enjoy, and perhaps if they have any questions or feedback for the show as well. You can stay up to date with all that I'm releasing here, guys. I do a solo show every Monday, a 3-minute thought every Thursday. I do 2 interviews a week on a Wednesday and a Saturday, and a book review every Friday. You can stay up to date with all that by subscribing to my newsletter at thehiddenwhy.com. Just enter your email address there, and also subscribing to the podcast on the platform that you choose to listen to your podcast. You can also support the show, guys, by using the Amazon links at thehiddenwhy.com. So if you like books, you can get all the books that I review there. And anything else, really, that you like to purchase through Amazon. So use that link, it helps support the show. And we've also got a deal with Audible, guys. Audible is a fantastic way to listen to all your favorite books. We've got a deal with them so you can get 2 free books when you subscribe subscribe to a 30-day free trial. So check that out, again, at thehiddenwhy.com. Guys, that's it from me. You know what to do. Go out there, breathe more passion into every single moment. Do everything with greater purpose. And in doing so, you will discover your hidden why. This is The Hidden Why. My name is Lee Martinuzzi. Until next time, peace, passion, and purpose. See you soon.